All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, my sidekick, co-host, and friend, Silent Phil. He makes it all go on the ones and twos. Special guest today is Michelle Hobbs, founder of Knox Joseph Distillery at the OTR Stillhouse, brand new establishment in Over the Rhine. And this is a passion project for Michelle, a long-term vision, long-time vision for her to make this happen. It is, Sherry has been there. It is a fantastic space and just recently opened at the end of 2021. So looking forward to having Michelle on here momentarily to talk about a new place. Love hearing news about new places opening.
Honestly, I've been there and it was just really, it's something I haven't seen here before. And I was like, ooh, I should talk about this at the end of the podcast, the next podcast. And then I was like, but why? I want to hear more about this. And so that's how that kind of, she came to be our guest this week.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to learning more about it.
Absolutely. And we know you as our listeners really gobble up episodes on restaurants and bars and food and beer. So we want to serve you, because we know that you, you enjoy, and you particularly enjoy hearing, I think, about new places. So Michelle will be joining us here momentarily, but first our political segment here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And, Sherry, you're
apparently there's life beyond City Hall when it comes to politics. Who knew?
Yeah, certainly this United States Senate race, the race to replace, succeed outgoing Senator Rob Portman. I wouldn't say heating up because it's already hot, and tens of millions of dollars have been spent. But it's really becoming clear as we turn. You know, we're well into March now, heading toward that May 1st primary. May 3rd, sorry, first Tuesday of May. Heading toward that primary now, less than 2 months away. It's becoming, really, it looks like a two-person race. The polling is showing that. Independent polls, now two in the past week, have come out showing Josh Mandel and Mike Gibbons, both Clevelanders, as the clear front runners here. I sat down for breakfast with Mike Gibbons yesterday as we record here on Wednesday. I had met him on Tuesday. I'm intrigued. And the thing is about Mike Gibbons, he's an investment banker from Cleveland. Grew up the son of his dad was a teacher and a coach in high school. Mom was a stay-at-home mom. Grew up in the suburban Parma in Cleveland, and really, a great story. Has five kids of his own. He said his last, his youngest just finished college or law school, maybe. And so he's like, yeah, this is a good time for him to venture into other things. But not an insider can truly say that he's an outsider candidate here, because this is a guy who spent his time and career in business and raising his family, and has now decided, hey, I'm gonna try this. He supported Trump in 2016. I believe he maybe was like a local finance chair or something along the way. He had some kind of role like that.
I will say, so I've mentioned this before during Jeopardy. A lot of these political ads for the Senate race, that I see them there. And the thing that has been the most surprising to me is that it is self-funded.
And mostly,
but to the
so far,
but to the tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's the thing, is he has poured in millions of his own money. And as of about a month ago, it was nearing about $12 million that he had spent. And here's the thing, like, he is spending his money very, very wisely. He is focusing. This is really a retail, because he is not an insider. He was telling me stories about how basically, you know, he's tried to make inroads with party people, and they've kind of, and this is a guy who's given two Republican candidates in this state for several years. That's really the extent of his involvement in politics over the last several years, as he's donated to, he said he's even donated to some of the people he's now running against, you know, over the years. Josh Mandel being, he said he gave to Josh Mandel a long time ago, when he was treasurer. But Mike Gibbons is a fascinating, candidate in this, that you think about all the big names and all the political insiders and the people who've been in office before. Well, this guy just quietly and diligently, I don't know if quietly is the right word, because he's all over radio ads. He's all over. But the key for him has been he's spending his money on network TV. Now, that's a difference between cable TV and network TV. His focus, he's got a lot of smart people on his team who have been doing this a long time, both in Washington and Columbus, who are doing his ads, and they are focused on network TV, and it's working.
Judging by the other commercials that appear during Jeopardy, it seems like their voters watch that.
They do, and that's the thing.
And we might skew older. but they vote.
That's right. And that's right. He's while a lot of other folks are, you know, trying to, I guess, placate some of the insider types, Mike Gibbons is going right to your everyday voter and your everyday Republican primary voter in this case.
And his commercials are not Trump-esque. The other candidates are, I'm for Trump, or this person's against Trump, or this person's for Trump. Like, it's very confusing. But his commercials are, I'm a businessman.
Yeah, and he's talked about Trump. He's a supporter of Trump. You know, he met with Trump around the CPAC conference a couple weeks ago. He saw Trump at, there was some kind of an event. He said he talked to Trump. Very briefly, you know, certainly you would consider him in the group who would want to have Trump's endorsement. But I don't think he is going out there. He has one ad where he says he's Trump tough. And you know, honestly, after talking to him and hearing his story, I sort of felt like a little, like I could see where Trump would like him because of his success in business. Trump likes a winner.
Yeah.
And Mike Gibbons is a guy who obviously made a lot of money in investment banking. And so I guess my ultimate thing here is don't sleep on Mike Gibbons. And an interesting point. I met with Josh Mandel back in November, and this was around the there was some kind of protest around. It was at Mason City Hall. I went up there and saw him and talked to him for a little bit, pulled him aside, and we chatted. And Josh Mandel said at that time, he said, I think Mike Gibbons will be my top competition when it's all said and done. And all my, he may very well be correct on that.
As of right now, the primary is still set for May 3rd. We're almost there.
That's right. So we just wanted to touch on that, give you a little insight as to some of the things, you know, that I've sat down and talked to a lot of these candidates, and I would encourage folks to read our reporter on this, Haley B. Miller. She covers the day to day of the race. Just go on Cincinnati.com and search her name, and you'll find all of her latest stories on that. But I think that's enough politics for now. Let's jump over and bring on Michelle Hobbs. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and always pleased to welcome folks who are opening new businesses, restaurants, bars, and in this case, distilleries. Uh-huh. Pleased to welcome Michelle Hobbs, founder of Knox Joseph Distillery at OTR Stillhouse. Michelle, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Hey, thanks for joining. Sherry is locked and loaded. She's got all kinds of questions.
Wait, is it Sunday brunch yet? No. Ugh, we're recording on Wednesday morning. It's too early to drink.
or is it?
So, Michelle, thank you for coming on. I just wanted to tell your story today because it, you know, I had a chance to visit the OTR Stillhouse a couple weeks ago, and just really, I saw what you have built there, and it's incredible, but it just didn't happen by accident. You didn't just, you know, you are a long time part of this community, and it started back then, right? As a glimmer in your eye.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually registered the name for the distillery. It was a different name back then, but it was in 2014 when the concept first came. So yeah, it took a long time.
But you did other things in the community, including living in it, right? Before, you know, starting a business.
I founded Pet Wants at Finley Market in 2010. Kind of got to a partnership with that in 2015 to franchise it. And there's a company that franchises Pet Wants all over the nation. It's actually in Puerto Rico and Canada and about 29 other states now.
What is Pet Wants?
Pet Wants is a local fresh food brand that started at Finley Market. If the best way to describe it is like a nutrition store for pets. We're not like a retail store, just go in a bunch of toys and stuff. It is brand focused exclusively with our food and then our treats that we make in house. And we buy a lot of local supplies. And for instance, we buy smelt and shrimp from Lucan's at Finley Market. We buy over 100 pounds of denuded inside round from Northside Meats every week that we're using to make fresh foods for pets.
And how did you start that? Is it because you have a pet?
Yeah, I had a pet that had problems, and we kept throwing money at it. Nothing was working. And you know, for some reason, I thought he was a celiac because of all these problems and nothing. And I thought it was food-based, and I just started working with a pet food business. It's a family-owned company and developing the brand Pet Wants. And it resonated with people, and we changed the way we presented the product. It was fresh, and we sold it by the pound, and we delivered it to your home. So when other folks had to transition, for instance, over the last 2 years to provide some kind of a delivery service with COVID to stay in business, it was always part of our business plan. We'd been delivering, you know, 700 or 800 homes a month as it was.
Wow. And now you do that in other cities. Does the food still get made here and get shipped to the other cities?
The food is made in Ohio, and it's shipped all over the country. Yes. Now, I don't make all of the formulas that are the daily feed, you know, dry formulas. But what we do is here in our shops in Cincinnati, we sell the Pet Wants brand, which is our brand, and then we make the treats in-house here. So we couldn't keep up with producing the food.
Wow. I mean, but that shows that you had a great product.
The brand was built on product quality, service, and integrity. And most of our growth has come through other customers, you know, we call them like our disciples who are out there talking about our products and, you know, really preaching to other people the benefits. And then Pet Wants is a brand. We've never bought an ad in Cincinnati. We participated with Finley Market in ads when they've done things. We've done some sponsorships for, like I did something with Edible Ohio, and I sponsored a literary program where they put those magazines in the schools for kids to pick up and read in low-income areas because food is so motivating to, you know, to do something, you know, maybe go out and start a garden and
right.
Learn how to take carrots and make a stew or a soup or tomatoes. So we sponsored that, but we've never bought an ad per se. And we built it on, you know, like I said, the integrity, the product and the service.
That's love it. And, you know, how does one go from your success in pet food to distillery, opening your own, founding and opening your own distillery.
So, I've had a crazy career, but I've jumped around a bunch, and it's mostly out of necessity. You know, I was in an industry that was wiped off the map by technology, And then my next in industry, I did some work in a recession, you know, killed it. And, you know, so you have to reinvent yourself those ways. After Pet Wants or during Pet Wants, I needed space to bring product in. And I found a building in over the Rhine in a fairly unconventional way through doing some digging. And then this building was way more than I needed, but I was able to get it. And, you know, people like me don't get buildings like this in over the Rhine. And so I just knew I had to do something spectacular with it. And in the research, found out there was an aquifer. And for some reason, my brain went to whiskey. So, and then I just started from that. And then, you know, I guess you take on what you can endure.
Wait, what kind of, it has an aquifer?
I just endured.
That is amazing. So wait, so you have this building, right? And it has an aquifer?
So if you look in the history, like, you know, when you buy buildings through an SBA program, you've got to do an EPA study.
Okay.
And in that EPA study, it gives you the history of the building. And in 1891, there was the Standard Ice Manufacturing Company here. Well, knowing that Ohio, you know, the Miami Valley in particular is full of, I mean, we're on top of the Great Miami Valley Aquifer. And that aquifer, you know, pretty much from the Great Lakes all the way down through, you know, Kentucky is where that great glacial slide, so to speak, happened and created all this limestone and all this gravel and stuff that we have in Ohio and all the limestone underground, so to speak, in caverns and caves down and through Kentucky. And all that has this water running deep beneath it. So I knew that. But when I saw that the Standard Ice Manufacturing Company was here, I'm like, well, they obviously tapped that aquifer because, you know, there was no Cincinnati Water Works in 1891.
Oh, my gosh. And so you have tapped into – this is not something I know. I'm sorry. You've tapped into the aquifer?
Yeah.
That's so incredible.
This is under, by the way, this is underneath the distillery?
It's under all of Cincinnati. And in Ohio, you own the mineral rights beneath your property. So – you know, so MGP, which is a big distillery over in Indiana that makes lots of brands, the local Remus brand is manufactured over there, for instance. They use the aquifer. New Riff over in Newport, they've tapped into the aquifer. So it wasn't, I didn't do anything groundbreaking there. Ohio laws are different. Indiana and Kentucky, they're much more freely able to use their waters in the ways that they want. I'm not using the water to the capacity I want to use it yet. It's going to take a lot of diligence and fighting some organizations, but it can be done. But that was the whole basis of everything here. So we tapped in that. We found it. We hit it. We brought it out of the water. We ran it like this, literally shooting out of the ground for probably 2 weeks. You know, and that was, I mean, took off running from there.
So you use that water to make the vodka?
We don't use the water to the capacity that we want to use it yet. The water is mostly led on as the inspiration. It is used. We are regulated through the agriculture department right now. So it's kind of crazy. And I'll tell you, it's frustrating because it boils down to this. If you wanted to like go out and say, I'm going to stand outside FC and I'm going to put Sherry's bottled water out here. I'm going to sell it for $1 a bottle and I'm going to fill up these waters at my tap in my house because, you know, it's great water. You can't do that. It's not legal in the state of Ohio. You're not licensed to resell that water is only for your own consumption. So that's kind of the restrictions they put on us here that we can't use it to be resold. So we can't use it like that. But it's contradictory because the state of Ohio says I am permitted to use my mineral rights in for anything below my property. So if that was gas or oil or, you know, fracking, that people sell the rights to beneath their land and then they are profitable off of it, right? So if you look at where bottled water comes from and who is bottling water, the laws are meant to protect them. So up at Lake Erie, Lake Michigan, you look at the statistics, how much water is being brought out of those Great Lakes, which are millions of gallons annually, and that water is used for bottling. That's okay. But for me, they're saying no. So basically, it's going to take a couple hundred thousand dollars in attorneys to go to the state of Ohio and say, you are prohibiting me for using the mineral rights beneath my property as the law states. You've just got to go, you know, and fight the people who've lobbied to change the law to protect big corporations.
Do you feel like as an adult, you're getting like your own new education in science and business?
And that goes back to, like I was talking about, endure. Like, it started a long time ago. I have this saying is, being strong is not about what you've conquered, but what you've endured. And you say that's knowledge. What I call it is, you know, just a lesson that I have to find a way around. And the knowledge comes afterwards. Like, you know, like, you shouldn't have to fight this. The law is the law, but for some reason, for what we're doing, it's not the law.
Gotcha.
It's frustrating.
Okay, but you are making vodka, and not only vodka, because I know when I was in there, I believe you're making award-winning vodka.
So we're making award-winning spirits. So it's, okay. So the vodka is the only one we haven't entered into a competition. It's so funny. And that's because there's so many vodkas out there. And of all the vodkas out there, Tito's, everybody buys. It's not expensive. It's a good vodka. And it is what it is, right? So, our vodka, we're very proud of. And, you know, on the back of the label, I kind of mentioned, like, you know, supposedly who, you know, there's a fight over who designed and invented vodka. And I'm like, leave that to historians. Let's talk about who makes it best. We think we make one of the best vodkas out there. But it's what we've done with our gins and our whiskey. Those have been award-winning products that we produced here in-house. Yeah.
Is Knox Joseph, did you decide to go the distillery route because there's so many breweries and there's not that many distilleries? I think of one other one in over the Rhine, but
When I started this back in 2014, I made a very comprehensive decision that, because I've lived down here since 1996, well, in the West End first, but then I live on Prospect till now, but was that I know all the restaurant guys. I know all the people in the businesses down here. I supported them all these years. I made a commitment to not compete with anyone. When I decided to do this, there were plenty of breweries, yes, but there were no distilleries at the time. So when I registered the distillery in 2014, my commitment was not to compete. I didn't want to design something or bring something to over the Rhine that would just move somebody from one, you know, spot to the next spot because it was new. I wanted to make something that would bring more people into the city and enhance the existing business there because they would go out and try new things. So there's nothing in-house here that we're doing that anyone else is doing. So even like, look at our food, you know, Sherry, if you had any of the food, it's Asian street food. I'm partnered with Josh Campbell on that. No one's doing that.
Right.
You know, the skewered idea for what we're doing, you know, no one's doing what we're doing. So I'm not, you know, bothered that, you know, at the time, like competing with any of these guys, you know, Jose Salazar, like over at Goose and Elder, wasn't even there at the time. But, you know, French Crush, you know, Jean Robert, you know, just, you know, even the guys over at Pho Lang Thang, anybody in this area, there was no one doing this Asian street food the way that we had, you know, discussed and grilling outside. You know, so that was different.
Honestly, let's take a second to describe what we're really talking about here, because it is maybe the kind of template of a big brewery. It is a large, huge warehouse type building, which you have really done up amazing, but it also has this great outdoor space where I guess where you're grilling, but like it has picnic tables. It's just this huge open space, especially now, like it gives you some room and it has parking. And so we're talking, it's very like compound-esque.
Yeah. I have referred to it as a compound. If you look at it on Google Maps overhead, you know, you'll see what it was, a couple of these buildings and a lot of concrete. So going back to being unique is that, you know, and looking at parking lots and like going to the aquifer and being like, you know, as trying to be, you know, as neutral as we can with the environment. Like I serve my products in glass. I use glassware. I don't throw things away because of how our operation is set up with the restaurant. Right now we do use disposables. It is, you know, biodegradable and environmentally, you know, approved stuff, but nonetheless that we want that to change. The compound itself was designed that I put turf down where there was concrete, and then the aquifer then receives water from the rain. It rains an average of 200 days annually in Hamilton County, whether it be trace rain or measurable rain. So now that rain gets back into the ground, water seeps, it makes its way eventually back to the aquifer instead of going into the storm drains here. And, you know, we have a problem in Cincinnati with MSD. They have the storm water running into the same system as the septics. You know, the sewer waters. So
and I unfortunately am quite familiar with that topic. I've written a lot about that. So yes.
You know a lot about that. So now my rainwater doesn't run off. It runs down. So we put that turf out there. The drawback to the turf, everything that's great about the turf, it's not pet friendly. Here's Michelle Hobbs, who owns Pet Wants with thousands of pet customers. And I'm saying you can't come here with your dog. It's hard. That's very difficult. But yeah, we've got almost a quarter acre out there to sit down. And, you know, pet urine doesn't, you know, travel through that. It has weep holes through it. So it's the same company who installed the turf at TQL Stadium installed my turf here. Do you think that there would be a dog park made out of TQL Stadium when they're not using the field? No.
No, I accidentally once during a tour put my foot on the line near the field, and I got yelled at across the stadium by a groundskeeper. So,
yeah, they're going to be a little bit more particular about theirs, obviously, but it's the same, you know, thing. Like they have weep holes about every 8 inches, so when it does rain, the water weeps through that mesh down through, you know, the substructure, which is a stamped limestone, crushed limestone, and a sand base. So, and by the way, it's designed so that if you drop your phone out there, it won't break. Or if you drop one of my glassware out there, it's not going to break. Up on the deck where the bottle shop is, I used recycled rubber pavers. It looks like clay pavers. You drop your glass out there, it'll bounce everything inside your glass all over you and whoever's standing next to you, but my glass won't break.
Which never happens when we're drinking vodka, I'm just going to say.
Never happens. Or beer.
Michelle, Knox Joseph, what's the significance, meaning of the name?
So, Sherry, if you saw my bottles, they look like books.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm not dumb to think that I'm going to walk in and put my bottles in anybody's bar because there's no bar shelf space for liquor. You walk in anybody over the Rhine and they have no space in there. Although a lot of people do want to support us, we actually have local restaurants and bars calling us wanting to put our stuff in. That goes back to the cult brand thing I was telling you before about, you know, people, you know, finding us. But so that shape of the book and the bottle is very specific in terms of we're learning and we're also going up against these legacy heritage brands. You know, these brands have hundreds of years of history and, you know, sexy folklore of bootlegging and, you know, back in the days of, you know, Remus and, you know, mafia and just all these crazy stories. Well, we don't have one. We're brand new. So this is our story and it starts very young. Knox Joseph is my son. He's 9. Wyatt Jack, in which the gin's named after, that's his twin brother, Wyatt. Huh. The Pearl Vodka, that's my daughter, Lennon. I call her Pearl, my girl Pearl. And I love that. I found that efflorescence label and it looks great on a book. So when you slide those up against each other, they will display as a set of book, a series. And that's our story. We're starting to tell it now.
Love it.
Yeah.
And you know what? You also have an aquifer
aquifer. And a lot of those, a lot of those probably legendary brands don't. So take that, guys.
Well, you know, but you in Kentucky, you know, they talk about the difference that the bourbon may has over other people is that the limestone water. It's part of that same system.
Wow.
And there's also a myth that people think bourbon can only be made in Kentucky, and that's not true. It has to be made in the United States, but there's not a product of origin for bourbon right now.
What is next for so you? How long have you been open? So since Christmas, right? So people have not yet to experience this huge outdoor space.
Our first day using the outdoor space was Saturday. It was amazing because FC had their first home game, and we had, you know, one of the Inkenstadt, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, one of the groups, the marching groups. This is their home this year, and we were very fortunate. We had a large turnout there and a great, you know, time with those folks. When we had Bockfest, the 5K went right in front of our retail store on Central Parkway, which is very confusing because Central Parkway is a little bitty bottle shop. It's tiny. And it's a little tasting room, and it's only open a few hours a day. So if you're driving by, it looks like it's empty. And I've had so many people say, you know, oh, Michelle, I've drove by. It doesn't look like anyone's there. And it's funny because I worked on this project for so long, and I missed a lot of events. Like, I missed a lot of fun people were having because I was working. I missed a lot of parties and evenings and things with my family. And whenever, you know, a man who is my wife and she, you know, she would go do something, you know, like, where's Shell? It's like, well, she's working on the distillery. And I'm sure now people drive by and they'll be like, oh my God, she's been working on this for how many years and that's it?
And it's a tasting room.
And, you know, it's like the joke is like, you know, she may have been at a distillery for the last 8 years, but there's no way it took that long to make that. So it's really deceiving out front. So the 5K went past us with the Bockfest parade. I had my kids, the three kids and I were out front. Amanda was in the Bockfest. It was the 5K walk, not the parade. We handed out our little cards, and we had a lot of people from the Bockfest 5K come back. So we had Bockfest people, we had 5K, and we had 75 or FC, and we had 75 degree weather. So we were the first time we were able to open up all of our doors. It was just a beautiful day.
But it is a large, lovely space indoors. And so even though we're going to have an ice storm this weekend, supposedly, like, there's plenty of indoor space to enjoy too. Tell us what your future dreams are. Like, what does this look like for you this summer? And what does it look like in 5 summers?
Well, I tell people this is a legacy brand. This location is a legacy location. My kids' kids will be coming here. My kids' kids' kids will come here, and they'll know this brand. It's not like I sat down. We're doing a thing with Cincinnati Watch Company. I don't know if you know that little company or not, but small startup Cincinnati Watch brand. There hasn't been a watch brand in Cincinnati, I think, since 1948. And they do these, you know, fun watches. And I told him, I said, if I'm going to do a watch with you, it has to be part of my brand. I'm not going to put my logo on it and call it an OTR Stillhouse or a Knox Joseph watch. So I had their watchmaker come. He came here yesterday, and I'm like, I have some leftover pieces of wood from my floor. The flooring at the OTR Stillhouse, were milled out of the joists that held this building up since 1899. So we took them down and we had them milled into hardwood flooring. So back in 1899, old growth timber was cut probably on site here and rough saw cut and used as the joist that held this place up all of these years. I got down to dirt, right, to build this place on the inside, removed those floor joists, replaced it with concrete underneath there, and you know, changed the structure to the flooring, took those floor joists out, and it's flooring. I have leftover. I'm like, if you can mill down the watch dial and put my wood in there.
Wow.
Because it's part of this, I'll do this project, but I'm not just going to put my logo on it. And he looked at me and I said, let me ask you a question. I'm like, you and I are building these new brands. I'm like, in 100 years, when someone takes your watch case and they say, hey, what can I get for this? Which of these watches are going to be the most valuable? And he looked at me, he said, OTR Stillhouse. I said, exactly. It's the inaugural year. It's using a part. It is part of the heritage. You are buying a piece of what this building is. So when I look at the future, it's not just next week. It's too short term to be next week. It's too many freakouts to be too next week. You know, there are too many things. We're going to war in the world. You know, we're just ramping out of a COVID, you know, surge with Omicron. To think about next week is terrifying. You've got to think long term and have vision that's going to carry you through these tiny obstacles that'll just, you know, scare you. I talked to a girl. I was trying to bring this girl to Cincinnati to do this really cool project. I've been working with Model Group. And she's like, I want to do this, but you can't have to help me. Find somebody to help me do it. I mean, her concept and what I've tried to get her to come here for the last several years would blow this city away. But she won't take that leap because you know why? She can't look past next week or next year. It's terrifying. You have to have longer vision.
Michelle, before we wrap up, tell us again how, you know, hey, you're a new customer. You want to come down and check out Knox Joseph Distillery. What's the address? What are you next to? And just give people kind of a sense of where they can get in and enjoy themselves.
Okay, so if you're riding a streetcar, you get off at Rheingeist, and you just take, it's about 250 steps. You want to take a left on Henry, which is opposite where the streetcar flips. Streetcar goes east to turn around flip, and then Henry going with you to your left, and you take it down past Dunlap, past the Dunlap Cafe, and it looks like it dead ends, but it turns right onto Branch, and we're just right up there on your left. You'll see our lawn. And if you go straight on Branch, we got a two-deck parking garage. I like to say, if you are in over the Rhine and you are not 3CDC, I have more parking than you. So our parking lot is at the end of Branch Street, but our lawn is at 2017 Branch Street. If you're coming from Central Parkway, you'll see our bottle shop, our little speakeasy, which is a small little gray building. And that is about 1,800 feet from TQL. So TQL will be on the west side of Central Parkway. We are on the east side of Central Parkway, north of TQL, past Finley Street. And you can enter there and go down the steps from the balcony. And you can also park just past that at the Ohio Means Jobs. And so the Ohio Means Jobs parking decks, upper and lower, belong to OTR Steelhouse on the weekends. We share that parking system with them. And by the way, Ohio Means Jobs is the company that when I write checks to the state of Ohio for all of my taxes, it actually gets written to Ohio Means Jobs. So we are supporting that parking system through the Ohio Means Jobs program through the Ohio Department of Liquor Control.
Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been great.
I learned a lot. And honestly, like sometimes I know a lot more about our guests, but I learned a lot today. And this is honest what Jason and I do. This is the kind of interview, like this is a window in, like we're learning as we go. And so thank you for sharing your story. It is the beginning of a great story.
I appreciate it. It's hard to get the story out. So I love that you gave us this opportunity.
Thanks, Michelle. And congratulations on Open Knox. Knox Joseph Distillery. And I want to encourage our listeners to go check out Knox Joseph Distillery.
Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. Distillery at the OTR Stillhouse.
You got to have that on there. At the OTR Stillhouse. Absolutely. Thanks, Michelle.
All right. Thanks, folks. Have a great one.
All right. Thanks again to Michelle Hobbs. And you know what? We thought let's make Michelle and Knox Joseph Distillery at the OTR Stillhouse our That's a Cincinnati Moment of the Week, because
that was a plan anyway.
but because there's a whole other aspect to the Knox Joseph Distillery that we didn't even touch on here. Sherry, you've been there and you've experienced it.
It seems like it's a great place for music. Like there was just really this large area for a band, and you could see them like easily loading and unloading, which, you know, you hear about the difficulties of that sometimes. And just this really this seamless spot, but then it faces the outdoor area too. So it's like an indoor outdoor space for music. And I mean, people are really clamoring for that right now.
Like bands.
Yes. And so I think it's going to be a really great space for that. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm trying to envision, like, this place must be huge.
Yeah, we'll have to go.
and Silent Phil says it's the largest non-theater stage NOTR?
I can't even think of anything that's close to it. Wow. Honestly, it was a very large space.
Wow. If you want to get out, you want to try someplace new, try the Knox Joseph Distillery at the OTR Stillhouse.
We got it.
So I'll make sure I got to get that on there. So thanks so much for listening this week, and we will catch you next week.